Chapter 4.
There's the school now, sir,
the driver shouts. We've been riding for an hour across rolling hills dotted with trees. The sun has set, the sky settling into that hazy blue of twilight. When I look out my window, I can't see anything but a canopy of branches overhead, and through the lacework of leaves, there's the moon, ripe as a melon. I'm starting to think that our driver must be imagining things too, but we crest a hill and Spence comes into glorious view. I had expected some sweet little cottage estate, the kind written about in halfpenny papers, where rosy-cheeked young girls play lawn tennis on tidy green fields. There is nothing cosy about Spence. The place is enormous, a madman's forgotten castle with great fat turrets and thin pointy spires. It would take a girl a year just to visit every room inside, no doubt.
Whoa!
The driver stopped short. There's someone in the road.
Who goes there?
A woman comes around to my side of the cab and peers in. An old gypsy woman. A richly embroidered scarf is wrapped tightly about her head, and her jewellery is pure gold, but otherwise she is dishevelled.
What now?
Tom sighs. I poke my head out. When the moonlight catches my face, the gypsy woman's face softens.
Oh, but it's you. You've come back to me.
I'm sorry, madam. You must have mistaken me for someone else.
Oh, but where is Carolina? Where is she? Did you take her?
She starts to moan softly.
Come on now, missus, let us by,
the driver calls.
There's a good lady.
With a snap of the reins, the cab jostles forward again as the old woman calls after us.
Mother Elena sees everything. She knows your heart. She knows.
Good Lord, they've got their own hermit,
Tom sneers.
How very fashionable.
Tom may laugh, but I can't wait to get out of the carriage and the dark. The horse draws us under the stone archway and through gates that open onto lovely grounds. I can just make out a wonderful green field, perfect for playing lawn tennis or croquet, on what looks like lush, overgrown gardens. A little farther out lies a grove of great trees, thick as a forest. Beyond the trees sits a chapel perched on a hill. The whole picture looks as if it's been standing this way for centuries, untouched. The carriage bounces up the hill that leads to Spence's front doors. I arch my head out the window to take in the full, massive scope of the building. There's something jutting up from the roof. It's hard to make it out in the fading light. The moon shifts from under a bank of clouds, and I see them clearly. Gargoyles. Moonlight ripples over the roof, illuminating bits and pieces. A bit of sharp tooth, a leering mouth, snarling eyes. The carriage jangles to a stop. My trunk is placed on the great stone steps outside the large wooden doors. Tom raps with the great brass knocker, which is roughly the size of my head. While we wait, he can't resist giving his last bit of brotherly advice.
Now, it is very important that you conduct yourself in a manner befitting your station while at Spence. It's fine to be kind to the lesser girls, but remember that they are not your equals.
Station. Lesser girls. Not your equals. It's a laugh, really. After all, I'm the unnatural one, responsible for her mother's murder, the one who sees visions. I pretend to freshen my hat in the brass reflection of the knocker. Any sense of foreboding I feel will probably disappear the minute the door opens and some kindly housekeeper takes me in with a warm hug and an open smile. Right. Give the door another good solid bang to show I'm a good solid girl, the kind every eerie boarding school would love to claim as its own. The heavy oak doors open, revealing a craggy-faced, thick-waisted bulwark of a housekeeper with all the warmth of Wales in January. She glares at me, wiping her hands on her starched white apron.
You must be Miss Doyle. We expected you a half hour ago. You've kept their mistress waiting. Come on, follow me.
The housekeeper bids us wait for a moment in a large, poorly lit parlour filled with dusty books and withering ferns. There is a fire going. It spits and hisses as it devours the dry wood. Laughter floats in through the open double doors, and in a moment I see several younger girls in white pinafores shuffling through the hall. One peeks in, sees me, and goes on as if I'm nothing more than a piece of furniture. But in a moment she's back with some of the others. They swoon over Tom, who preens for them, bowing, which sets them to blushing and giggling. God help us all. I'm afraid I may have to take the fireplace poker to my brother to silence this spectacle. Fortunately, I'm spared from any murderous impulses. The humourless housekeeper is back. It's time for Tom and I to make our goodbyes, which consist mainly of the two of us staring at the carpet.
Well then, I believe I'll see you next month, on Assembly Day, with the other families.
Yes, I suppose so.
Make us proud, Gemma,
he says at last. No sentimental reassurances. I love you. It's all going to be just fine, you'll see. He smiles once again for the adoring crowd of girls still hiding in the hallway, and then he's gone. I am alone.
This way, miss, if you please,
the housekeeper says. I follow her out to a huge open foyer where an incredible double staircase sits. The stairs branch off, both left and right. A bit of breeze from an open window shakes the crystals of a chandelier above me. It's dazzling. Gobs of exquisite crystals strung along metal crafted into elaborate snakes.
Watch your step, miss,
the housekeeper advises.
Stairs is steep.
The stairs rope up and around for what seem like miles. Over the banister, I can see the black and white marble tiles making diamond patterns on the floor far below. A painting of a silver-haired woman in a dress that would have been the height of fashion some 20 years ago greets us at the top of the stairs.
That's Mrs. Spence,
the housekeeper informs me. Oh, I say. Lovely. The portrait is enormous, like having the eye of God watch over you. We move on, down a long corridor to a set of thick double doors. The housekeeper knocks with her meaty fist, waits. A voice answers from the other side of the doors.
Come in!
And I'm ushered into a room with dark green wallpaper in a peacock feather pattern. A somewhat heavy-set woman with piles of brown hair going grey sits at a large desk, a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles on her nose.
That will be all, Bridget,
she says, dismissing the warm and embracing housekeeper. The headmistress goes back to finishing her correspondence, while I stand on the Persian rug, pretending I'm absolutely fascinated by a figurine of a little German maid carrying buckets of milk on her shoulders. What I really want to do is turn around and bolt for the door. So sorry, my mistake. I believe I was supposed to report to another boarding school run by human beings who might offer a girl some tea, or at least a chair. A mantel clock ticks off the seconds, the rhythm lulling me into a tiredness I've been fighting. Finally, the headmistress puts down her pen. She points to a chair on the other side of the desk.
Sit!
There is no please, no would you be so kind. All in all, I'm feeling as welcome as a dose of cod liver oil. The beast attempts a beatific look that could be mistaken for a bout of painful wind.
I am Mrs. Nightwing, headmistress of Spence Academy. I trust you had a pleasant journey, Miss Doyle.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock.